Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films and Film and Stuff, and of course, Deviant Legion. And with me today, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Miss Rachel. Say hello, Miss Rachel.
Oh, I need to say hello, nurse. And if there's any nurses out there, hit me up. I would love your services. You're a fucking hero right now.
Yeah, Rachel has to crunch, so give her a big virtual hug. But we're here specifically to welcome back one of our favorite guests who has a number of things going on, and even you reached the Pike's Peak on something, Sam, and that would be director Sam Irvin. Sam, it's really nice to have you back with us.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thank you for having me, Carl. And Rachel, I think you've been kind of possessed by Kathleen Turner or something. Your voice sounds very, very sexy.
Oh, darling. When I'm good, I'm okay. But when I'm bad, I'm really good at it.
You're not bad. You're just drawn that way.
Oh, exactly. My God. You know, I am a redhead, but I could only aspire to Jessica Rabbit. but, yes, I am so excited. You, Sam Irvin, are the man who was able to draw me out of my not COVID, but very sick deathbed today to do a podcast. So I actually had to cancel one that I was really excited about this weekend because I was so sick. But I was like, no, I don't care what's going on. I'm going to be there for Sam. Like,
oh, nice.
I have to.
Well, I appreciate it. And we hope that you get fully well very quickly.
Absolutely.
Well, I am making
Absolutely.
some good-ass Italian food right now. So that's, like, very healing for the body and soul. So I think we're going to be good.
Good.
Okay, so Sam, there's a number of things that's been going on with you lately. I don't know where to start. So what we have is you have a real high point in your directing career that we want to talk about. You also just published a book that is doing extremely well. Another book, you know, and so tell us what's going on.
Oh, my goodness. It's been crazy. I was kind of out of work for 2.5 years during the pandemic of my directing gigs. And then suddenly last year, starting around April, I got hired to direct a rom-com for television starring Jodie Sweetin, Full House. And I got the ball rolling again. And before the end of the year, I had directed 6 movies. Which in that amount of time, like whatever it is, 9 months or whatever, well, that was the most I've ever directed in that short a period of time in the history of
Good
my
God.
Entire career. And so that was pretty exciting way to come back with a vengeance. And ironically, I mean, in the last several years or so, I've mostly been doing Hallmark Christmas movies, Lifetime thrillers, that kind of niche. And all of a sudden, every single one of these 6 movies that I did were rom-coms. So apparently that's rom-coms are the new black. it just became, you know, that was the in thing. So I did a bunch of rom-coms. I did a second one with Jodie Sweetin. I did 2 with Scout Taylor Compton, who was the star of Rob Zombie's 2 Halloween movies, and it was just loads of fun, and I love all genres. I mean, you know, my wheelhouse is horror movies, obviously, but you know, I love doing any of this, and I just love directing, and that's what my career is now. I don't do development hell anymore. I don't write scripts anymore. I just am a director for hire on projects that are already financed and ready to go, and they want me, and they call me up, and boom, you know, I start the next day. kind of thing. And
so
that's how I like it. That sort of answers
the question how you did 6 movies in 9 months. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
In other words, you go in and you're hired, you do the shoot, and then you're hired for another one. You don't do any of the post-production or anything like that.
Yeah, the last 3 of them were just boom, boom, boom. I went to shoot one in Kentucky in September, and the production company, it's based in Los Angeles, but they shoot their films in Kentucky because of the tax incentive and state incentive to come shoot there. And so I was going there just to do one movie, and while we were shooting that one, they said, hey, you want to do another one? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And then they hired me for a 3rd one. And so it was literally, we had 2 weeks between the shooting of each one to do the prep. And it was just boom, boom, boom. And that's the way I love it. And so that, 90% of my direct time is on set, and the other little bit is working with the editor on a director's cut. And as soon as I turn in my director's cut, I'm washed my hands of it. I'm done. They can do whatever they need to do with it after that. And I move on to the next, and it's great. It's exactly what I would have loved to have done my entire career. Cause I've wasted a lot of time on passion projects, but never got off the ground, never got paid a dime. You know what I mean? And it's just, this is heaven for me.
So while we're on the topic of your movie set, can I just ask you the biggest question right now?
Sure.
What does somebody have to do to be able to work on one of your movies one day? Because I swear to God, I keep up with you. I'm not a Facebook talker. I'm a Facebook stalker. So you don't ever see me comment on your page, but I'm there. I'm creeping you every single day. I mean, you're one of the people that's one of my top people that comes up. And I see your updates about your movie sets and what you guys are doing and all of your, costume contests and potlucks and crazy shit that you do. And I don't even care what it is I'm doing. If I'm just, getting you guys coffee or something, I want to be a part of that one day. How does this happen for somebody? Because I mean, you guys look like you have the most freaking fun.
Well, we do. My mantra is that, look, if we all wanted to be in movies, work on movies, we're living the dream. If we can't have fun, then what is the point? And I do have fun on my set. I treat everybody with respect, no matter what their position is. We're all a family. We're all trying to make the best film we can. And I just love to have fun. I designate at least 2 days during the shoot for a costume contest day where all the crew is invited to wear, we might do. I love camouflage, and my nickname is Captain Samouflage. And so
you mean camouflage, not camouflage.
So one of the days is always designated for camouflage day. And then the other day might be leopard day or just an open costume day where you could wear anything from cosplay to Halloween, whatever. Or it could be a Hawaiian shirt day, whatever it is, pick it. And then on those days, the lead actors and I will be the judges, and we give away a first, second, and third prize, and we put together these great swag bags that end up being pretty valuable, and with gift cards and all kinds of cool stuff. And I put in some of the books and magazines and things that I've done, and Blu-rays of Elvira's Haunted Hills, which is a favorite film that I directed, and things like that. And everybody, just has a great time. And to get to work on these things, I never do the hiring. So it doesn't really pay to suck up to me. You have to seek out the production companies and figure out who the line producer is or the production manager and how you can get your resume in to them. A lot of times on these productions, I shoot a lot of films in various states that have these great incentives. I shoot a lot of films in Kentucky. I shoot films in Utah. I've shot one in Tennessee. You know, sometimes they are required to hire locals. So if you live there, it's a big advantage because I think it helps increases the tax credit. So,
right.
You know, some of it is based on that. You know, but oftentimes they can't find certain people with the right experience that are local, and they might have to bring them in from nearby towns or, you know, in Kentucky, we sometimes would hire some people out of Atlanta and things like that. So, you know, it really depends project to project, but you want to get, you know, you just want to try to figure out, you know, who to contact at these production companies to try to get your resumes in there.
Oh, definitely. Well, dude, if you're ever just not busy and in Tennessee at any point, that's where I live now. So
yeah.
Hit me up and we will have a grand time. That'll bring me up to another conversation point later. But I know that Carl has some things to ask you about as well. So,
Yeah, it's really something in terms of how those things are work. One of the people we know in Memphis is Keenan Walker, and Keenan does a lot locally, and he's also done things in L.A. too. So I do know how that works. But yeah, if you're ever in Tennessee, you two should hook up. There's no question about it. And if you're ever in the metro area, would love to take you out to lunch or something like that, Sam.
It'd be great
so,
fun.
One other thing I do have to say about these cosplay and costume things is if I'm ever involved, I'm going to have to bring my sunglasses with me. I'm just saying. We've talked. This is a joke between Sam and I because if you follow his Facebook page, it's your fashion sense is wondrous. It truly is.
Yeah.
One of a kind.
I sort of feel like every day is a challenge, and every day is a cosplay day in my world. I want to just wow the, you know, I love wearing bright colors and trying different fashion things, and I'm just always doing something nutty, and I have fun with it, and it's tongue in cheek, but it's also an empowering thing. You know how drag queens talk about how many of them feel so much more powerful when they're in drag. Well, this is I guess you could call it a form of drag. It's not
yeah.
me turning into a female, but it's me just being more fashionable and like my alter ego is Captain Samouflage, and you know, I'll wear a captain's hat and wear a lot of camouflage, and I do feel empowered. I love it. It's just really fun, and I can't get enough of it. So yeah, it's turned into its own kind of sideline of my of what I do. You know, when I go make commission appearances, I wear, you know, a different thing each day of the weekend, and I start off the day by making a little video, put on Facebook of, hey, come out and see me at, you know, Monster Bash today, and look what I'm wearing, you know, and it's like, you know, what are you wearing kind of thing, and people have, you know, and they enjoy it, and it's fun.
Now, I have a question
about
this, because I'm sorry, Carl, you go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think I've noticed recently, and this is just, you know, the seamstress side of me, because I am in the real world, I am a quasi-professional seamstress. I thought I noticed at some point you mentioning that your husband, Gary, made a lot of your outfits.
Well, a lot is putting it strongly.
A number of? Is that a better way to say it?
Yeah. My husband does make clothes. He mostly makes them for himself. But he makes extraordinary stuff. He does it, you know, it's as an artist, I totally understand because when he's done commissions for people in the past,
mm-hmm.
it turns into work, and he doesn't like it to be work. because it'll be, well, what if you did this, or what if you use this color instead, or what if you do the... And,
I am a seamstress. I completely understand. That's why my number one no acceptances deal usually is, I will not do your wedding dress.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah.
I will not make your wedding dress. That's too personal. That's too much. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
You can pay to yell at somebody
else.
You
know, as an artist, he wants to create things. He wants his own inspiration, and he wants to create it the way he sees it, and not under the direction of a client or other people. And I totally get that. That is 100% the way I am about my writing. That's why I won't write scripts anymore, because scripts go through committees of notes and changes and rewrites and everything else. And I cannot stomach that one more minute in my lifetime ever. I will never write a script again. It's why I write my books, because I write it the way I want it, and that's the way it's going to be published. And that's the way I write my article. So the deal, if there's ever an editor involved or anything else, I have to have 100% control or I'm not interested. It's at my age, I've been disappointed too many times, soul crushed too many times. I take pride in the way I write, and it's got to be my way or the highway.
And I respect the hell out of that so much.
With the clothes that he makes, you know?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, talking about writing, you just had a party over the weekend for a new book that you just came out with. So let's talk about that.
I
was a teenage monster hunter. I love it.
Yes. It's got a very long title, actually. I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter, How I Met Vincent Price, Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, and More. All my 1970s bizarre fanzine interviews and the jaw-dropping dish behind them, with a foreword by Cassandra Peterson, a.k.a. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. That is the official title. It's a mouthful.
Nice.
But basically what this book is, I'm so proud of it. It's the thing I'm most proud of all the writing I've done, and it's the most personal one of all. It's my coming-of-age memoir of my childhood and teenage years up through the age of 19. And when I was a kid, I had a fanzine on horror films called Bizarre, and I did 35 interviews with horror royalty, from Vincent Price, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, Ingrid Pitt, Diana Rigg, Donald Pleasance, you name them, I interviewed them. In person, I went to London a couple of times and bamboozled my parents to send me over there as a high school graduation present, et cetera. And when I published all those interviews back in the early 70s, they're these incredible time capsules. And I decided that I needed to collect all of them into one book. And as I started doing that, I was writing introductions to each one of them, and I realized that the behind the scenes of how I got these interviews and what happened was often as interesting as the interview itself, and many times even more so, and very funny things happen and incredible coincidences happen. And the more I wrote about the behind the scenes, then I realized, well, wait a minute, this is going to need a setup. I can't just start the interviews. I've got to talk about my fanzine and how it all came about. And I realized, okay, I got to do a few chapters on my life as a kid. Well, as I started writing that, it became a memoir. And so it's a hybrid book. It's very hard to describe because it's half memoir and half of these vintage time capsule interviews. And it's a massive book. It's 350 pages, 200,000 words. It has 600 photographs. It has 25 full-page, full-color cartoons by the great Dan Gallagher. And it's just this massive, beautiful, full color. Even if the photographs are, some of them are black and white, many of them are color, but all the pages have colors on them. It's the most colorful, beautiful coffee table book. It's available in hardback, paperback, and audiobook people. 21 hours audiobook. I narrate it, but I also got a whole slew of guest stars to come in and help me with it. Cassandra Peterson, she recorded her foreword. But for each of those interviews, I got a lot of the people who were still alive to come back and record their answers. And Jane Seymour did her interview. Stephanie Beecham did hers. Linda Hayden, Madeline Smith, Chloe Franks, they all did their interviews, re-recorded, you know, the answers to their interviews this past fall. And then for the people who have passed away, like Diana Rigg, I got Juliette Mills to come and do hers, and Juliette's husband in real life, Maxwell Caulfield. He did Ralph Bates and Shane Bryant. And anyway, Olivia Dabo from Conan the Destroyer and The Wonder Years. I had worked with her on a film, and she was British, and I had her come in and do Ingrid Pitt, and she totally inhabited her. Anyway, it's amazing audiobook that I highly recommend. And of course, I highly recommend both the print version, because you're otherwise not going to see all these 600 photos and cartoons, and the audio version to get the full experience and these incredible performances and to hear me tell you the story. One, I'm giving 100% of the profits, 100%, not just a portion, 100% of the profits to the Trevor Project, which is the great organization that supports LGBTQ youth. And the organization is also a favorite of Cassandra Peterson, is Elvira. And she recommended to me when I was looking for an LGBTQ cause, she said, oh, you got to consider the Trevor Project. And it was the perfect fit because the book is about my youth. So this organization that supports LGBTQ youth was the perfect fit. And so we're really, really happy about that, that the book is purely to raise money for that organization. So, and on Saturday, what you were talking about, Carl, is that this past Saturday, which was January 7th, for those people who might be listening to this at a later date, it was January 7th of 2023, we had a book party at Dark Delicacies, which is this amazing, horror bookshop in Burbank, California, owned by Sue and Del Howison. They're just legends. And, they're such legends that, you know, when they were having a hard time staying open during COVID, no less than Guillermo del Toro stepped in to help them financially keep it going. I mean, that's how important this store is for us monster kids. And so they hosted gave us this venue, and we had the most fun of all. And I had to make it a costume, encourage people to come in costume. So then I got a celebrity panel to be the judges for the costume party. And I have Julie Brown of Earth Girls Are Easy, Olivia Dabo of Conan the Destroyer, Scout Taylor Compton from Rob Zombie's Halloween movies. And also Beth Broderick, who is Zelda on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and Brock Urich, who was in Tyler Perry's The Have and the Have Not, and also Tom O'Connell, who's Darth Vader on the Obi-Wan Kenobi series right now with Ewan McGregor. All of them. Oh, and also Virginia Weatherall, who is one of the interviewees in the book. I interviewed her in 1974 with her husband, Ralph Bates. Remember Ralph Bates from Taste the Blood of Dracula?
Oh, absolutely. I remember Ralph Bates.
Lord Courtly, and he played Dr. Frankenstein in Horror of Frankenstein, and he played Dr. Jekyll in Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde. Well, he met Virginia Weatherall on Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, and they got married right after. She played a prostitute in that film. And she was also in Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange. She was the leading lady in Curse of the Crimson Altar, also known as The Crimson Cult, that also starred Boris Karloff, Christopher Lee, and Barbara Steele. I mean, And she also played one of the vampire brides in Dan Curtis's Dracula with Jack Palance. Okay, I had not seen Virginia in nearly 50 years. And she lives in London, but she happened to be here in America, in L.A., at this particular time, visiting her son, the son that she had with Ralph Bates, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But her son lives here, film composer. And just yesterday, his latest project, Anne Rice's The Mayfair Witches, premiered on AMC, which he scored. Well, he came with his mom, Virginia Weatherall, to support my book thing. And I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I was in tears. It was so incredible to see her after all this time and to have such, you know, royalty come and be part of this little book thing. I mean, I'm still on a high from it, obviously. It was just the most incredible event. And it was standing room only, and we it was just a fantastic, fantastic event. And it really was a great way to help launch the book.
Absolutely. One of the things that I think this book, and really looking back at your life, and that you reconnect with people. And, you know, of course, that's with Virginia particularly. But it makes you just look at how the journey's been. And to relive that in the way that you did, that's an amazing thing. And that's a real blessing.
Putting together this book, I mean, I had a really charmed childhood. I mean, my dad owned movie theaters, and this was back in the days long before home video. You know, I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, the only way to see movies was to go buy a ticket at the theater and then wait for it to maybe show up on television when there was only three channels, people, if you can ever imagine. NBC, ABC, and CBS, and they have filled most of their airwaves with, you know, TV shows. So the amount of time that they showed movies was very limited. And so it was hard to see movies back then. And I'd be able to go to the theater and sit through the movie as many times as I wanted. And if it was a film that I loved, I could come back every day that week and see it. If Dad was showing a Hammer film or a Vincent Price movie, I would see it four or five times. I just absolutely, you know, it was my playground. And that's how I really wanted, you know, I got the bug and wanted to become a director. And it was just, that's how it was for me as a kid. And in writing the book, I kind of relived my whole relationship with Vincent Price, which ended up becoming a very, very close friend of his, and putting it all together in one place in this book. It really reminded me just how important his friendship was with me in all those years, from the time I met him, from the time of maybe 14 years old, way up into my adulthood. And it's why Cassandra Peterson and I, she was also great friends with him, it's why we dedicated our film, Elvira's Haunted Hills, to Vincent Price. And the movie is a spoof of the Vincent Price, Edgar Allan Poe, Roger Corman movies, including A Fit in the Pendulum. Right. we get Elvira strapped down to the slab and have the pendulum blade, you know, swinging right over. I mean, that's how direct an homage it is. And really touching. Go ahead.
I just need to say something from somebody of my generation. I don't know if you know this, Sam, but I'm not the youngest one. I'm 37 now, but I'm considerably younger than everybody on the podcast and everybody in the generation of those that we typically interview. And you have no idea how jealous people like me, who literally grew up with Elvira and Vincent Price and things like that, you have no idea how jealous I am and people like me are of all of you guys who are old enough to have had and or maintained friendships with these amazing people. you are the closest I will ever get, and I am so happy that all of these awesome people are surrounding themselves with such awesome people. So I just need to let you know that before it slips out of my brain, but keep going.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I do not take it for granted. I pinch myself every day that I got to be friends with Vincent Price, Christopher Lee, and Peter Cushing and all these people. I mean, I had to. It was like, as a kid, it was like you know, they talk about how you manifest things to happen. I somehow manifested or made these things happen. I just made them happen. And even at the age of 19, I was like, okay, the Hammer Films is going under. Amicus is no longer in business. I can see that the whole British film industry is in terrible shape. I want to direct movies, but it's probably not going to be too viable to try to immigrate to London and work for companies that are, you know, going out of business or not in business anymore. What am I going to do? Oh, I am falling in love with this new kid on the block, Brian De Palma. His film Phantom of the Paradise and Sisters absolutely blew me away. I want to see if I can meet him. And so... In 1975, when I'm 19, I get in touch with him. I organize a little film festival of his early films at the University of South Carolina, where I was going to school. He's a nobody. He hasn't had a hit film yet. Phantom of the Paradise was a box office disaster. Sisters was only a minor, you know, success. Sure, he came out and had him in my film class. We did screenings of his stuff and everything else. And what was he working on at the moment? He was casting Carrie, which became his huge breakaway, you know, breakthrough hit. It got Oscar nominations for Sissy Spacek and Piper Laurie and was a gigantic success. So I met him just before he hit the big time. And then ended up working with him as his assistant on several films. And, you know, it was, and so I kind of manifested that, or I guess you could say I was the professional stalker, you know, but I made it happen for myself. You know, it's like in all these cases, it was me becoming obsessed and saying, I want to meet these people. And that's what I did. And I just somehow made it happen. You know, working with De Palma was what launched me into the movie industry. And then I, you know, progressed to directing my own films. And as Carl mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm now up to, this latest spate of six films that I directed this past year, I crossed the 50th film mark. In fact, I'm now.
I know. I was
51.
So excited. I was actually the one that told him about that. I was like, "Did you see Sam Spades today? Oh my God!"
Yeah. In fact, it's up to 51 because my 50th one I directed in November and my 51st one in December and finally came home just in time for Christmas. So yeah, it's been, you know, it's pretty amazing. And I'm 66, but I remind people that's only 18 Celsius, so I'm barely legal.
That's about how you look, honey. I swear to God, I'm 37, and you look like you could be my son. All right.
Well, thank you very much. I feel like an 18-year-old. I really do. I'm still a kid at heart. I'm still the monster kid that I was when I was making Bizarre Fanzine and, you know, going to meet Christopher Lee, who had me to lunch with him at Pinewood Studios when he was making Man with the Golden Gun and had me stay and watch shooting all day with Roger Moore and Britt Eklund and Maude Adams. And then we shared a limo ride with Hervé Villechaize at the end of the day, and it was quite hysterical.
I saw the post in that, and I've heard that story before. That is really something.
It's pretty funny. It also gets pretty raunchy, but it's everybody's favorite anecdote. And there's just all kinds of fun stories in the book that you really got to check out. And I'm still a kid at heart. I really am. I'm totally.
Well, you know, I just wanted to say, with everyone doing their ages, I just hit the senior citizen mark less than a week ago. I'm now 65.
62?
So.
Are you is it 62?
65.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yep. I guess you get Medicare now, or is that 66? I forget.
Yes. Thank God.
Yeah.
But anyway,
you definitely get the discount at all the buffets now. So, Carl,
right, but you
this
know
is going to be the best thing when you come back to see me in Memphis again, because we got all the senior citizen buffets.
You only have to be 55 to hit that at Denny's, you know. So I've been 10 years on, 11 years.
I live in the South. We have the Waffle House. Why would you go to Denny's? I'm sorry.
You know,
it's great.
But the reason I kind of mentioned that is because you and I, you know, my path was much different. But you know, you and I, that whole thing about growing up in the 60s and early 70s, you know, your folks had a roster of movie theaters, and that's wonderful. When I was 14 years old and we moved to Bradford, Pennsylvania, one of our customers at the music store ran the drive-in. And so the year after that, when I turned 15, he had me helping him out, which really meant like just staying in the damn projection booth and smoking dope and watching these wonderful horror, awful films. And so
the drive-ins, they would run like five of them a night, you know, and it would just be.
Oh, yeah. Generally, it was three but if they were short, they were in the 60 to 75 minutes, he could do four or five. You know, and it was wondrous. So you and I share a lot of that background. We really do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, if you were a monster kid growing up in the 60s, you had Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine. You were addicted to that.
Absolutely.
And the Castle of Frankenstein and all the others. You had Creepy, Eerie, and Vampirella magazines. You had all the Aurora model kits of the Universal Monsters. And you had... You know, I mean, they're just all of us have these pop culture things in common. Plus, they were running, they called it different things in different markets, but Columbia Pictures or Screen Gems marketed a big giant package of horror movies to syndication and for television stations, local television stations to run in the afternoons, on Saturdays, or late night TV, and they called it Shock. And in our market in Asheville, North Carolina, they called it Shock Theater, and it came on Saturday afternoons right after American Bandstand, and you would get to see, you know, Frankenstein, Dracula, Bride of Frankenstein, The Mummy, The Wolfman, all the great classic horror movies. And that's where we were introduced to those things, on TV.
Right.
And I talked to just countless colleagues who were our age, and that was just the thing. And then in some markets, and a lot of markets, they had horror hosts. Our market, low budget, and we did not have a horror host. But all of the horror hosts sort of came out of that, and it started with Elvira.
We grew up in Pittsburgh, and Chillbilly Cardelli. And I was at Monster Bash the last year he was there, before he got sick.
Wow.
And I was the first one in line to see him. And then when he left at the end, I was outside to say, you know what? You really changed my childhood. Because growing up, I had physical problems and things like that. And so all I did was read and I love monster movies, and I love science fiction. And he,
well, Carl,
you know, Hillabilly really did something special.
Yeah. There, the one thing that I think all of us have in common who absolutely became obsessed with horror movies is it's everybody talks about this. It's called the Outsider Theory. And I completely subscribe to this theory, and that is that for those of us who were outsiders, that could be anything from being a closeted gay kid to someone with physical disabilities, to someone who's just bullied, to someone who is a goth, you know, who dresses goth and was ridiculed by the quote-unquote normal kids, whatever. If you were an outsider, you identified with these movies, especially for me, the Frankenstein films, because here you have a quote-unquote freak of nature who is misunderstood by society, who's bullied, who you know, many times he wasn't trying to kill people. The real villain of Frankenstein is Dr. Frankenstein, who abandoned him when he didn't turn out the way he wanted, which is what our parents did if they didn't like the fact that we were gay or whatever. And what other authority figures in our lives who treated us badly, you know? It's that we identify, or I certainly, I'm not going to speak for you, but I certainly had just this seminal sort of passion for the Frankenstein monster that affected me in ways that I didn't even fully understand at the time. And as I got older, I'm like, oh my God, no wonder I had such empathy for him. No wonder I cried every time I saw Bride of Frankenstein.
Well, you're not the only one that cried, because I did too. I remember
I
was
like,
crying at the end of it, and she thought I was scared, and it's not. No, I'm sad for the monster.
Exactly.
Monster.
King Kong. We cried in King Kong. We were sad for him because he was taken out of his, you know, element and you know, treated like a freak of nature. And that's how, you know, for us, it was way more than being scared. It was these characters were just so they just got to me, and it's why Bride of Frankenstein is my favorite film of all time, and it's just why I love those movies on a really deep emotional level, and they were hugely important.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny how that works, you know. But you know, where you've gone throughout your whole life, and how things have worked out for you, and doing what you want to do, and the people that have surrounded you, and you've led a really blessed life, Sam. And
I'm very appreciative of it.
And the thing about it is that you're doing the thing you love, and you got people around you and that sort of thing. And you know what? I'm now retired, and Rachel is one of my best people, and all the people work, you know. But we really, you know, I really love the fact that people like you come on and that we connect. And that to me is really, really important. For that, I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
I love
coming on
show, Carl. And it's like we speak the same language, and we have this pop culture thing that we grew up in and understand the importance of all of it. You know, people on the outside don't, you know, they're just like, oh, you know, okay, horror movies, whatever. But for us, it's a really personal, deep emotional thing, and we're, you know, it's always going to be with me, and you know, it affects everything I do, affects everything that I direct. It all goes back to these seminal things that I loved as a kid. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to anyway. Listen, with all the people you know, if you ever want to put a good word in for Deviant Legion, we'd love to have some of your friends on.
Who was the person you mentioned?
I said what I said was, you know, as far as what we do here on Deviant Legion, and that sort of thing, if you ever want to put in a good word with your friends to come on to the podcast,
I would thank you profusely. Exactly.
So, Rachel, anything else you want to go over with Sam? Oh, I think we might have missed Rachel.
I don't think so. Like, I've talked to you about everything I wanted to. Like I said, I watched you all throughout the holiday season while you were filming your new movies, and I'm really excited to watch them. And I guess my biggest debate right now is, do I need to watch your new movies for Christmas now and decide if I want to watch them again during the Christmas season, or do I just need to wait and, like, read your books in the interim?
You need to read my book in the interim. The ones, the six rom-coms that I did this past year, I would tell you the titles, but they always end up changing the titles, so there's no point in promoting a title that you'll never hear of again.
Okay.
But as soon as I know the titles and where they're going to be available to be seen, I will certainly be promoting that on my Facebook. Anybody out there needs to follow me on Facebook or Instagram. And on Instagram, I'm Sam_Irvin_director. And you'll, you know, I promote my stuff pretty religiously. So you'll know when you're going to see some new stuff.
And just so everybody knows, it's Sam, S-I-M, or S-A-M, Sam I am, S-A-M, Irvin, I-R-V-I-N.
Correct. I-R-V-I-N. Yes, indeed. And but also, yeah, you know, if you haven't seen Elvira's Haunted Hills or haven't seen it of late, a year ago, October, we put out the most beautiful, amazing Blu-ray restoration for its 20th anniversary through Shout Factory. And Cassandra, I wrote and co-directed a little 5-minute intro that Cassandra did as Elvira on the red couch. And it's a little funny introduction to our 20th anniversary edition of the movie. And there's a ton of extras with interviews with everybody in the cast and behind the scenes documentaries and all kinds of cool stuff on that incredible Blu-ray from Shout Factory. So I highly recommend that. The movie's never looked as beautiful as it does now. So that's also, it's certainly the most rewarding movie that I've ever directed in terms of just its inspiration being the Vincent Price Poe movies and being able to build the set specification from the ground up and everything else. I mean, it's just an absolutely, I just love it. So I highly recommend that for sure.
Okay. So yeah, follow Sam on Facebook. And Sam, give us the title again of your book and where people can get it.
I'm sure
they can get it from Amazon.
Yeah, it's I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter, and you can get it all on Amazon, the hardback, the paperback, or the audiobook. The audiobook is on Audible, Amazon, and iTunes, and it's pretty amazing. I'm really, really proud of it. Of all the things that I've done, that it's the most heartfelt, and so grab that up. It's just endless, the amount of stuff that's in it. It's just jam-packed.
Well,
and
listen,
just in case you forget,
on everything, Sam.
Like, I keep having to try and remember the title. I keep thinking of the Ramones song, I Was a Teenage Anarchist.
I Was a Teenage Monster Hunter.
Exactly.
There you go.
So I've been singing that every time I think about the title of your book since it's been released in the past couple of weeks. Just so you know, you're responsible for continuing the punk movement. Thank you, Sam. We love you for that.
Great.
So before we go, I do want to do a quick housekeeping here. So right now, tomorrow, Josh Buckland and I will be doing our first winter commentary watch, celebrating winter scenes. And we're going to be doing Smilla's Sense of Snow, and that's tomorrow. And then on Thursday, no, I take that back. On Friday, we've got Cathode Ray Mission, and they're doing a show on Orson Welles, and that's, of course, hosted by Adam Ferenz. On Saturday, we're going to do a Carl's Tavern, and I'm going to be joined by TC, who does Rock This Town radio with TC on our network. And I'm going to be doing a show called Make a Jazz Noise Here. And with our radio shows, we basically deal more with rock and that sort of thing, but we've never done a jazz show. So we're going to do that on Saturday. On Sunday, we got Rock This Town Radio, and he's going to do one-word song titles. And I can also tell you in the mix, though we are not set yet, we're going to welcome back a number of people, including directors Amy Hesketh and also Robert J. Walker is going to be with us. He'll be with us during February in Black History Month. We'll be doing that. Mike House is going to be with us, who is an author of the Spaghetti Western Journal, and he has three volumes of that out. So we have lots coming up, but nothing is set in stone yet, but that at least will tell you what is happening this week, and who knows, there might be a surprise show on Wednesday or Thursday, and we'll have to figure that one out too if that happens. So that's what we've got. Dan, Sam, many thanks for being on, and you're always welcome back, always an open door.
Oh, thank you so much. I always have a great time on your show. Thank you so much, Carl and Rachel.
Okay. And I think at this point, again, I want to thank Sam, and I want to thank all our listeners and all the people at Incredibly Strange Films and Film and Stuff and all my people at Deviant Legion. And I think at this point, we're going to say good night. So let's all say good night, people.
Good night.
Good night, people.
Good night.
Bye. Love you, Sam. Say hi to Gary.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Good night.